This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call podcast. It is Monday, 17th of May, 2021, by the way. And we had a very interesting week, to say the least, last week. Look at your daily charts, the very steep sell-off, and then a very sharp recovery, partial recovery at least, and it depends where you're looking on the scale of that recovery. But if we look at our trusty NASDAQ 100, we've been focusing in on quite interesting for a couple of reasons. We've found support at that 61.8% retracement. There's a reason we track these types of retracement numbers almost within to the point. So you could argue this is sort of a last gasp support level on on a breakdown relative to the prior rally wave. So we bounced off of that, and there's still a lot of ways to go to recover more towards the top, and 21-day moving average, perhaps a key resistance there. The S&P 500 bouncing a bit more profoundly relative to the sell-off and actually exceeded its local 61.8% retracement. But Peter, we talked a little bit about this. I want to launch right into it. The correlation between treasuries and U.S. equities is something really to observe. I'm going to skip a little bit here to a slide I created, slide five, a graphic I created there. It's very unusual to see the degree of sort of intraday and even day-to-day correlation in treasuries versus the equity market. So what I'm trying to show on slide five is that big comeback in the market. And here, just so you oriented, the NASDAQ is the blue line and the 10-year treasury price-wise is the black line. So that big rally from the 1st of April was sort of a relief rally that the U.S. yields weren't going to continue blasting into the stratosphere. There was a lot of concern focused on rising yields up to the end of March, beginning of April. So that makes some sense. And then you saw a period of sort of somewhat non-correlation. But look at the tightness in the correlation in the last, let's call it 10 days, extremely tight. And this, I think, speaks to the risk of, and I think you would agree, Peter, and have mentioned the same, that there's considerable risk of volatility because you're not seeing these two major asset classes offering any kind of diversification in terms of value at risk. And because trillions of dollars in portfolios are created on these risk parity concepts that assume that the correlation is negative, not positive. With that absurdly long intro, your impressions on that and how the week wrapped up last week.
Yeah, so we know from historic data going back 70 years or so that there is typically actually a positive correlation between bonds and stocks, but we have been in a period, I would say, over the past 23 years with a negative average correlation, which have benefited a lot of asset allocation models. And that's also why they have become extremely popular together with risk parity in particular. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it doesn't take a lot of imagination to think that if we go much higher in interest rates, maybe in an aggressive fashion, then we have bonds down and you have the discount rate up. So stocks also go down and that could create some losses. So yeah, as I wrote over the weekend to you guys, I mean, it just feels like that volatility can only go up from here. So it's definitely worth having in mind and keep attention to, because like it can become quite violent. We have seen over the past couple of years that these asset allocation triggered sell-off can be quite nasty. If we jump back a little bit, John, to slide three, I just want to highlight that it's basically right now in equities, the commodity sector versus everything else. If we sort of exclude India is doing quite well given their severe new wave in terms of COVID-19 cases. But you can see from the month to date, commodity index up 4.5%, and then you have everything else basically down. So I think this is an inflation story and potential where we go from here, and the commodity sector is becoming so interesting because it's that versus everything else. It's so binary, and the ones that get this right will get a lot of returns right over the next couple of years. Just want to quickly mention as well on slide three, we have the Eurostoxx 50 is very back, floating with the all-time highs there. Impressive comeback, as you said, John, in the past two trading sessions, Thursday and Friday there. And then on slide four, talking about commodities, we have to mention, and I'll come back to that on when I talk about earnings later into this podcast, but I just want to show on slide four, we got the underlying inflation gauge from the Fed in New York, the full data set. So that's both online and offline prices. I'm measuring here the 6 months change in the year-over-year rates, basically acceleration. And you're seeing a blistering acceleration in US inflation. And as I said on the internal call, John, the acceleration is even more painful because it's coming off positive inflation rate, whereas back in 2009, that acceleration we had there came off declining prices. So the feeling for consumers this time around is so much different, and that's what I'm betting on, that the psychology and the feedback loops will soon kick in, and we will see more sustained higher inflations and wage pressures.
Yeah, well, we have to get speaking of that, and because there's so much going on, we have to get at the very root of all this, Ola, and that is the underlying commodity prices themselves. Seen some pretty interesting moves here, to say the least, in terms of inflation, not inflation levels, commodity price levels dropping. I noticed some of the ags and iron ore out in China. What's going on here in commodities?
Well, I think it's interesting to note that the latest cut report from the U.S. authorities, Commitment of Traders report, which basically ran up until last Tuesday, basically showed that even though we had multiple commodities making gains that week of more than 4%, we actually did see a small net reduction in the overall length that the hedge fund held across 24 futures contracts. You can see that on slide 10 in today's deck. That some of the hot commodities as of late, some like copper and corn, actually saw a net selling even though the price was zooming higher, could indicate that we may be in for a bit of a pause here, that the market may have just extended itself beyond levels that the market feel comfortable with at this time. We saw that in the agricultural space last week because there's been so much focus on the worries about supply, especially out of Brazil in recent months. But we had the monthly WASDE report out just before we went on a long weekend last week on Wednesday. And it basically came with a bit more of a soothing outlook for the short-term outlook, basically saying that they were seeing lower export of US corn. They were seeing a small upgrade to production this year, and also thereby seeing higher stock levels at the end of this crop year, next summer. So we saw quite some significant setbacks last week. Some of that corn lost 12% on the week. It's the biggest setback we had since this rally started back in June. So I think what's important now, if you look at the grain sector, is that we know with the Brazil drought and lower production now more or less known, the focus will clearly turn now to the Northern Hemisphere planting and growing season. So really just they need to look out the window just to get a gauge for where these markets are taking us. And so far, the news has been somewhat more uplifting than we've seen of late, and that's just taking the sting out of this rally. And interesting note on slide 9, that even though we've seen this phenomenal rally in corn and wheat and soybeans, the net length held in those three contracts is actually now back down to the lowest since December. So again, funds are struggling really to get too excited about these continued rallies. We'll see if that's just a buying and dip opportunities or not.
All right, and then finishing up the talk on inflation, you mentioned that underlying inflation gauge, Peter, and inflation isn't, of course, just commodities. That's only one input. But it is interesting to note as well, the Friday release of the preliminary May University of Michigan sentiment also includes an inflation expectations component. The overall index was down and down quite sharply. I wonder to what degree this is linked to that Colonial pipeline catastrophe that, when people are scrambling on the streets for gas, running out of gas in the U.S., it affects sentiment very quickly. So that could just be a one-off that gets wiped away. But it's just worth noting here and just also noting the history of inflation expectations. On slide 6, you can see I put up the 5 to 10 year in black, and the blue is the year ahead. And that year ahead just spikes absurdly. I mean, consumers being asked in a survey are not good at prophesying the future of inflation. You see crazy spikes like the 9/11. That's a crazy spike lower back in the 2001 timeframe. You see a crazy spike higher for 1 month on the Hurricane Katrina in 2005. So you're seeing one of these spikes now, and that will be the key question, as Peter mentioned, whether we're getting some kind of self-fulfilling process going here, something that's more reflexive. I would say it's more impressive to see the 5 to 10 year expectations picking up and quite consistently so. But still, the last two episodes were both 2011 and 2008 associated with big rises in gasoline prices and of course crude oil prices. So this will be one to watch for sure in the coming two to three months. And then along, along the lines with the markets jerking back and forth, the FX has been just awful for traders trying to pick up direction. So we've seen a crazy back and forth in the dollar. First, it was lower on the payrolls, and then that break was reversed last week. And then on Friday, because I suppose because of strong risk sentiment in treasuries, the yields continuing lower, whereas there's a lot of focus on a breakout in, for example, bond yields in Europe, we saw the dollar sharply weaker. So just all over the map, and we'll be looking for direction this week from the US dollar, which we're not getting lately. The yen seems to be focusing on European yields rather than US yields and continuing its bearish ways. You can see the latest trend levels on slide 7 in our trend overview on the FX board. And you can see the euro dollar snap back on Friday. Again, that big break higher in bunds. Is that going to extend here? I think that it will be the key coincide indicator, some sort of, again, the cycle of optimism in Europe about opening up and a resurgence in growth there. Ola, if also looking on that trend overview, you see some of the stronger readings on the positive side, if not the strongest, is gold picking up here and really interesting levels in play into the end of the week and as we start the week this week.
Yes, we've well, gold's uptrend, which has now been in place for the past week, 6 weeks. It was challenged midweek last week, but we had a very strong end of week rally, and that rally has continued over the weekend or into the Monday. And we are now back above the 200-day moving average. We are above some retracement levels that we've been focusing on, just around that 1850 level. So if you look on slide 8, you can basically see now that trend line, which, well, if effectively it's not a trend line until it's been touched three times, but at least the line coming down from the August highs is the next level of focus. 1858 is the level, followed by 1878, the next level of interest to the upside. But again, the drivers is the fact that we got nominal yields not really going anywhere right now, but underneath the hood, we are basically seeing a gold-friendly cocktail of rising break-evens and lower real yields, and that is probably one of the key drivers for gold. Maybe also just a bit of Middle East tension, Israel-Gaza situation right now, maybe attracting some a few bids. And I think the extreme volatility in the crypto space probably also potentially adding a bit into gold. At least from an investment perspective, we have now seen quite a strong pickup last week, both from futures funds or hedge funds, and also ETF holdings have actually been on a steady increase now for the past 10 days.
All right. Now, actually, before I get to the next bit here on earnings and our calendar for the week ahead from Peter, I just want to just highlight it once again. We dropped two special episodes of the podcast Thursday and Friday last week. Peter on Thursday ran through, or the one we released on Thursday, it was recorded slightly earlier, running through green transformation stocks and a very interesting look at that space, and especially that and the fading in performance there and what it indicates about the space, as well as some speculation on if we're in some sort of beginning of a cycle of rotating into value versus growth. It's a great podcast. Do go back and have a listen if you missed that one. And then on Friday, we put out one with where I interviewed our CIO, Stan Jakobsen, on all things inflation, where are we headed, and what is likely next for the cycle. One of his interesting points is that we're likely peaking out in terms of a lot of the data and pressures right now. And then as the stimulus effects fade quickly, we're gearing up for something big coming down the pike in certainly Q4, if not before then. But back to the week and where we are now and earnings that are lying ahead this week. Peter, what's your focus this week? It looks like it's a more of an Asian focus.
Yes, so you're right, John. There, it's big focus this week on Chinese earnings, slide 12. So we have Meituan, Xiaomi, Tencent reporting today, according to the Bloomberg's earnings calendar. We have NetEase and Baidu, also Chinese companies, tomorrow. And then Wednesday, JD.com that postponed its earnings release date. And then on Friday, Pinduoduo. So it's very, very important for emerging markets, which emerging market equities, which really have been trailing the broader world indices, despite the value versus growth rotation, which is typically something that favors emerging markets. But keep in mind, a big proportion of the Chinese equity market the MSCI Emerging Markets Index on equities is now dominated by Chinese technology companies and e-commerce companies. So that's the one to follow. And then also I've highlighted Walmart, Home Depot, which is tomorrow, and then Lowe's on Wednesday. I think those three companies are super important to watch for some gauge on where inflation is going from here, simply because of the broad footprint they have, but also the type of merchandise that these companies are selling. And then I think it's worth noting as well, look at the quarter-on-quarter growth rate on earnings in the MSCI world. It's just blistering, 26% gain, and it's almost flat for NASDAQ 100. So this is really shows you the value rotation that is happening. And as we talked about on that Green Transformation podcast we did on Thursday, John, I really think that this this value trade has much more to go versus growth. But paddling back a little bit to slide 11, so we were just at slide 12, but now slide 11, Ryanair has reported this morning here in Europe. And I think it's interesting to see what they're saying about, you know, the pickup in aviation. And the company is posting a big loss, obviously, over the past fiscal year, almost €1 billion euros. But the CFO and especially the CEO is quite positive on traffic picking up speed in the second half of the year. And they expect a lot of countries to be added to the green list and that these vaccine passports will overtake the PCR test and remove a lot of hurdles for aviation to pick up speed. But they're not providing any guidance for the fiscal year 2022. They're not following the calendar year. It's sort of it's skewed a little bit. But not posting any guidance because of there's still a lot of uncertainty. But and the reason why I think Ryanair is so interesting is that they are the most cost-efficient airliner in the world. So if they see a pickup and they beginning to become profitable, then we know the industry is healing. So we'll continue to monitor what's happening with Ryanair.
Okay. And on the macro calendar this week, a bit quieter this week. We've got a little bit out today, a little bit more than usual on a Monday. Vice Chair cleared out speaking. The Fed seems to be in radio silence mode, at least in terms of providing any guidance you can hang your hat on. But the FOMC minutes will be up on Wednesday. And of course, we'll be looking for any hints of discomfort by more than a member or two with the current guidance. And again, that insistence on looking through inflation and wanting to see employment getting back towards more full employment before sending any message on a taper, et cetera. And then we're getting the first rounds of things like the regional manufacturing surveys, starting with today's Empire manufacturing number. And that'll continue later in the week with the Philadelphia one on Thursday. And yeah, RBA minutes up tonight. Not much expecting much there. It's the July meeting that is really in play for Australia. And then we'll get the flash PMI numbers out of the Eurozone, one of the most forward-looking numbers from the Eurozone this week. That'll be up on Friday, though. Still, in terms of opening up, it's really going to be the June-July timeframe for Eurozone, at least on the services side. And I think the other thing we'll be looking for in general as a theme is we saw, for example, on Friday, the U.S. April retail sales. The March numbers revised actually a little bit higher to, you know, absurd numbers like plus 10.6% month on month. That was revised up from the 10.2 previously. I'm sorry, that's year on year. And then the April number came in flat, and the core number came in quite disappointing for the April cycle. So March was, you know, even crazier, good, and better than expected on the stimulus checks. And April has come in quickly, and what we're looking for, what we'll be looking for in May, is the degree to which this is turning into, of course, outright negative numbers, as we saw in the previous rounds of stimulus checks. So again, further evidence that we are seeing certainly a deceleration, if not worse, in the numbers as the immediate stimulus effects, at least in the U.S., start to fade. And to what degree opening up is over compensating for some of that. All right, we're going to call it a day, and we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.